Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
On Point is a production of NPR and WBUR Boston. The program is made possible by your financial support. Please pledge online at WBUR.org.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. By 2014, just 8 years from now, the No Child Left Behind Act mandates that there be no racial achievement gap in American education. None. All children, black, white, Hispanic, Asian, performing on the same bell curve of test scores. It's a tough deadline and a beautiful idea. Trouble is, despite Bush administration claims, most studies show it is not happening. Test score gaps show up in kindergarten and just get worse, except where they don't. There are trend-bucking success stories in this country, remarkable schools where that gap is being closed, child by child. Today, we'll talk with three principals who have made it happen. Up next on Point, in the trenches and winning the war on America's education achievement gap. We've got a great crew to learn from today from right across the country, New Jersey, Texas, and California. Joining me first from Culver City, California, is Peter Davis, principal at the Hill Classical Middle School in Long Beach, California. 7 years ago, the state threatened to take over the school because of its problems. This year, it's one of 292 schools nationwide to be recognized as a No Child Left Behind Blue Ribbon School, recognized in a Standard & Poor's survey as a school that is closing the racial achievement gap. Peter Davis, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Also with us from Newark, New Jersey, is Shaw Regans, principal and math teacher at Team Academy Charter School. Founded in 2002 for grades 5 through 8, the school is one of 52 KIPP schools, or Knowledge is Power program schools nationwide that have received funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. His students' math scores jumped from the 31st percentile in his first year, 2002, to the 91st percentile this past year. The U.S. Department of Education selected him in 2005 as one of 50 educators for the American Star of Teaching Award. Shaw Regans, thank you for being here.
Hey, how you doing?
We're doing great and delighted to have you. We're going to be joined in a moment by College Station Texas Principal Rick Hill. But gentlemen, let me jump in first with you. First, I have to say it's a delight to see what's happening with your schools, but we see these big overarching numbers and we try and understand the difference. Peter Davis, Shaw Regans, Peter, first to you. You know what the national trends are. You know how hard it has been to close this gap. Why is it so hard nationally? Why have you had success in your school?
I think that, well, the first answer, the first part, it's hard because there's a lot of elements you have to deal with as far as educating the students and deciding on educational practices. And I think what has made a difference for us is that the district allowed us to, in essence, remake ourselves. We didn't change teachers or anything of that nature, but we changed the name of the school. We added a number of programs that weren't at the school at the time. The principal that was there before me added about 8 different elements to our school structure, and it's taken 7 years to put all those elements together.
Now, let's understand it. You've got 58% Hispanic, 14% black, 14 Asian, 12 white. And just a few years ago, you could not fill the 350 openings at the school. Now you've got 1,200 applicants for 350 spots. Does that make you a magnet school? Is that why your performance is going up so markedly, because you're now drawing the best and the brightest?
Well, that's partly it. We're a federal magnet school in that we've received $1.3 million over the past 3 years to help build our technology program. But it is the difference of being called a classical school, and you can raise expectations of the staff, you can raise expectations of the students, and you can raise expectations of the parents because you're a classical school, and we require different things than the regular middle school setup.
Shaw Regans, in Newark, New Jersey, 72% of your school students have free and reduced price lunches, 97% black, 3% Hispanic. So you've got racial minorities and you've got plenty of poverty, it would look like right there. What's your basic formula for making this thing work? Here you are, principal, you're still teaching, you're 29, and you're doing great. How are you doing it?
unlike Mr. Davis, we got to start fresh, following the KIPP formula. Has basically allowed us to set up a school from the start and, you know, just begin the school year off with high expectations, begin the school year off with just established standards and I mean, just the general expectations of the teachers. Who
because you're a charter school, because you're part of a bigger program.
Yeah, certainly. You know, being a charter school, you know, you're granted certain freedoms, if you will, to basically create and set up a school and structure a school in which, you know, unlike, you know, doing a transformation, mm-hmm. you got to kind of undo a lot of the mistakes of that school that existed prior to you getting there. You know, we mm-hmm. basically got to start off fresh.
So you've got that freedom. We'll look at charter school versus public school, but you've got the freedom. You got a clean slate there.
Yep.
What did you
yep.
do with it? What's your formula? What main keys to success would you point to?
Well, I think the main thing is high expectations. That's a big deal. I mean, I've taught in public school prior to coming to Team Academy, or you know, I'm heading up Team mm-hmm. Academy, and I mean, it really comes down to, you know, what you expect from your teachers, what you expect, you know, just of yourselves, and what you expect of the students. That's definitely the first element. The second would be, you know, just overall investment. You know, bringing teachers up, you know, and making them a part of the mission of the school. You know, basically informing teachers coming in that it's not just about you and your classroom, it's about the entire school, and getting them on board with the mission and basically pushing forward is probably the main thing that separates at least the school we at now at Team Academy versus the school I came from.
So there's your high horizon, high expectations, and we're all on a team here. And then you've got some very nitty-gritty things. As I understand it, Shireen's, longer days and longer school years, for starters.
Yeah. We definitely, you know, the KIPP formula basically was to start, have a longer school day, you know, more time on task. So kids are in the building by 7:25. 7:25 is considered late. Kids remain Monday through Thursday until 5 and 3 o'clock on Friday.
Wow.
And then we also have, I guess, kind of an after-school program that continues from 5 to 6 Monday through Thursday as well. We also have Saturday school, which on average happens about twice a month, 20 Saturdays throughout the year.
And a longer school year, how long, sir?
I think we had 220 days total. We also go to school. We're basically in school 11 months of the 12-month calendar. We attend school in the summer as well, and it's not just – we actually start our curriculum and start our teaching in August. It's not just for students who need time to catch up or, you know, students who are struggling. It's, you know, that's when our school year starts, in August. So we're basically in school from August straight through until July.
And you've got, within that big chunk of time, 11 months of the year and a lot of hours a day, a zero tolerance policy for fighting, play fighting, teasing. What is this? A very tight behavioral control? Is that how you see it? Or?
Well, not necessarily. Just expectations, standards. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, part of it, you know, I mean, with the whole, to touch on it, the fighting in particular, you know, no school outright allows fighting.
Sure.
You know, the difference is that, you know, we look at the root, like what are some of the things that causes kids to fight? So teasing is definitely a big thing. So, you know, the philosophy is if you address the small things, you address the things that cause these problems, then those problems don't exist. And so if you come to a school and, you know, here you are teasing someone you know, we make a big deal of someone teasing someone else, I mean, fighting is not even thought of. You know, and then there's also other things more on the proactive side in terms of character development and getting kids invested into the school. And
you spend a lot of time talking about moral values in the classroom, in assemblies.
Yes.
Peter Davis, let me turn to you at the nitty-gritty level, and we want to get your big picture take, because all this takes place in a big national environment that we've got to stare at. But in the school, what are the key kind of nitty-gritty policy elements that you feel help get traction on this gap?
Well, we have we have some similarities to Mr. Regan's class mm-hmm. Or school, but we have expected teaching practice called essential elements of effective instruction. Every teacher is expected to use that form of teaching strategies in their classrooms. We have for our character ed and safety, we have a safe and civil schools program that we put together. It's a national program, but we instituted it at our school. And we, speaking about fighting, we have a positive conflict resolution board that we have up, and we reward classes every 20 days if they don't have any kind of conflict or physical contact takes place. So mm-hmm. we've trained the kids on what we expect them to do. So like Mr. Regan is saying, you don't get to the point where you want to hit somebody.
And there's a reward for everyone if they pull it off.
By grade level. Every 20 mm-hmm. days, we're a mandatory uniform school. Mm-hmm. So if they get through 20 days of positive non-conflict resolution, then we have a jeans day on Friday. And then if they get to 40 days, then we have extra time at lunch for that grade level or grade levels that achieve it.
We want to know more about the nitty-gritty, but we got to touch the big picture a little bit as well here. I believe you're an African-American. They're in California, principal. You know the national picture here. Your school's done very well. What about, we still got this gap, what about all these schools that do not? How do you look at them? Do you look at them as laggards, as, you know, not stepping up, or as disadvantaged and thereby unable to close the gap?
Well, I don't think anybody's a laggard in public education. But I think what happens is that in our case, we got a chance to restructure, change how we look. So sometimes you have to restructure what you're doing, and you have to look at different ways of doing what you're doing. But we have district support to do that, and so we're not working by ourselves. And the district itself has, of the eight programs that we've instituted, six of those are also supported by the district at the district level. So we're able to institute things not as this is what we do, Justice Hill, but this is what the district expects. And then we fine-tuned some of those things to make it work at our school. And to be honest, I have some great leadership. We've had great leadership at the school in the last 7 years. And we have some very strong teachers who have been there when it wasn't so good. And they stayed with us, and they're enjoying it when it is good. But they had to actually change the way they teach and think and so forth. And that takes time because you're changing the way people operate. Some of the teachers have been in there 17, 18 years, and but they're willing to change. Mm.
We've been joined from Culver City, California, by Peter Davis at Hill Classical Middle School in Long Beach, California. From Newark, New Jersey, by Shaw Regans at the Team Academy Charter School there. And right now, from College Station, Texas, by Rick Hill, principal at Cypress Grove Intermediate School. He's been principal there for 5 years, in the same school district for 18 years. His school is the only school in all of Texas that Standard & Poor's has identified as having reduced the achievement gap for both African-American and Hispanic students. Rick Hill, thanks very much for being with us.
Great to be here.
We've been talking with principals Regans and Davis. They both have pretty high poverty rates in their schools and very high minority student populations. Your minority student population is a minority in your school. A lot of schools face this as well. But you've dived in there in a more middle-class neighborhood. A lot of white kids in your school as well, maybe 13% African-American, 10% Hispanic. So we've got a different environment here. How have you addressed the achievement gap?
Well, it's interesting listening to Peter and Shaw earlier that a lot of the same things is reaffirming to me. Peter talked about effective elements of instruction. We have what we call essential elements of instruction. And really, for me, when I got to Cypress Grove, the mindset was we did overall very well as a school. However, it's, these kids don't do well. And they're never going to do well, kind of thing. And really, it started with a mindset belief change in the fact that I said, okay, we have these kids, so what are we going to do to help them pass? And so it's not an issue of, well, we have them, so that's going to be our plight. It's not a plight. It's what are we going to do now? And so we talked about culturally relevant teaching. And, is it a responsibility issue why kids aren't doing things? Because, if you have a project due the next day, well, a lot of our parents are able to run to Walmart and Target and get everything. Well, you know what?
Right.
We have families that aren't able to do that. And so is it because we haven't provided the right capabilities for them to do this.
So culturally relevant teaching there, you're saying, is an economic issue of what kind of support they can get from their families, or is it
but it's more than that. It's really more. It's going to the community. It's going to one of the things that we did. We enlisted our parents and said, you know what? This is what we have. Our white kids do well. Our African-American kids don't do as well. And it's like, we want to help you. You help us. What do we need to do? And so it's home visits. It's and again, I love the high expectations. Mm-hmm. That's what you do. You have high expectations for kids. You expect them to pass, and they do. And we've significantly lowered that gap. you need to understand that all the time, this tax testing that we do, the standardized testing, each year the standard for passing has been going up. So kids had to do better each year
right.
to pass the test. So we raised our scores overall, but we're also closing the gap.
Everybody is happy to see that. Everybody wants to see those scores go up. But how do you feel about being the only school in Texas? And I don't mean to single Texas out here. All states have their problems. But you've got the only school in Texas, if Standard & Poor's has got it right, that has reduced the gap for African-American and Hispanic students. I mean, on the one hand, you want to celebrate. On the other hand, you want to cry.
Right. And the thing is, there's lots of schools that do, they've lowered the scores in African-American, the achievement gap in African-American scores. They've lowered it in Hispanic. But we got both. And that's kind of and I agree. There ought to be tons of them doing it. And part of it is it's individual interventions with kids. Our district really has had a mindset change. We started a committee about 6 or 7 years ago. Mm-hmm. That was all means all. In other words, if we're going to say all kids are going to be successful, do we mean all kids are going to be successful?
All means all. I love that.
Yeah,
and
that's what it is. If we're going to say all, then we better mean all.
Mm.
We have our it's kind of a district thing, too. And they were talking about early interventions earlier, Peter and Shaw were a little bit. And we've also, district-wide, we've started early interventions because a lot of that can be helped with those early interventions, like you were saying earlier. Those gaps are showing up very early with kids.
Mm. Principals Hill, Regans, and Davis, there's a lot we want to hear from you, and I want to bring our listeners into the conversation as well. Let me turn first to Columbia, South Carolina, and Tim. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. This
Hi.
Is Tim.
Hi.
I have like a statement and a question.
Yes, sir.
I think the problem relies on Black mothers and fathers that are uneducated, didn't graduate, have 3 or 4 kids, send their kids to school. When the kids come home to explain the work to them, they don't even know it. So there's a problem with the parents that are uneducated, that the child has no one to go to help them with their homework.
Yep.
Not only that, in these poor neighborhoods, I'm black, and I know some people in poor neighborhoods. They learn rap songs faster than they do minor history. So there's a parenting thing that comes in between. So it can't be all on No Child Left Behind.
So is there a question with that, Tim, or just a tough observation?
The question I have is that why don't the nation find some, something to help parents educate themselves to help the children?
We got it, Tim, loud and clear. Shaw, is that you?
Yeah, can I chime in on that?
Yes, please.
We definitely have tons of parents who are 100% supportive in what we're doing, but we also have situations or parents and families who aren't, or kids that come from families who aren't as supportive. I mean, ways in which we've addressed that, I mean, yeah, you're right. You know, parenting is definitely important, and, you know, when it's all said and done, you know, a school cannot replace a parent, but a school can definitely step in and do things that, you know, some kids, you know, and provide that support in ways in which their parents aren't. So one thing we do in particular is the extended school day. So, mm-hmm. you know, we have our school day ends at 5, but we have many kids who choose to stay around until 6, some even later than that, to get their homework done. So now they're in a situation in which, okay, there's no one at home. And this is not for every kid. We have certain kids who
sure.
just like being there, and other kids who parents are working and can use the extra time of kids being in school. But for the kids who don't have that support at home, they can stay at school and get help from teachers, from older students who are helping them out and get that support with the homework and whatnot. Other things, I mean, just having, like I said, a longer school day, a school year mm-hmm. in particular, and specifically, you know, there's not a lot of downtime for kids to kind of to waste their time and to get into things.
Starting the rap song over their mouth.
And that type of stuff.
Right.
And, I mean, in addition to that, we have done stuff like, you know, using music as a mechanism to teach and to catch kids up and whatnot. I mean, that's not the only way. That's mm-hmm. just one particular way. You know, the gentleman mentioned in Texas, being culturally relevant, which isn't just from a economic standpoint,
mm-hmm.
but also from, you know, kids, their interests and the things in which they like and the things in which that motivate them specific to them and who they are.
Make it real to them.
Motivate, Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's not just a black-white thing. I mean, there's things that motivate, you know, as a school, you want to provide an abundance of things that that each kid in your school can identify with. You know, you want to provide a choice of five different clubs because some kids are interested in basketball, some kids are interested in art. You know, so just as a school in general, it's providing those options.
Abundance is a beautiful thing. Peter Davis, what do you say to our caller Tim's observation? I mean, the achievement gap, one of the hard things about it is it's not new. And there's a kind of generational pass along here he's pointing to. How do you build a fire break in that?
Well, we attempt it in about three different ways. One is that we do offer parent classes. The district offers parent classes. And they offer also even for they have an African-American parent association that holds meetings throughout the district throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
On a school level, well, we acknowledge that is an issue, and we also – so we work on having positive parent conferences. One of our current professional development areas is how to have a positive parent conference and teach the parent what it is you want them to be able to do. But so we even are working on ways that if a parent doesn't understand how to read what's going on and so forth, but we have the kids taking, for instance, Cornell notes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, their parent can use the Cornell notes as a quiz for the child. They create it in class, and they can use it at home. So
they
we
can
show the
walk
parent
them
how to
through it,
that.
Whether they know the material
whether
themselves
you know the
or,
stuff
not.
Or not.
I could use that.
Because what I tell them is that if your child can explain it to you, then they know it. If they mm-hmm. can't, then they yep. probably don't know it. So mm-hmm. we offer those kind of skills. And the third thing we do as a staff is we understand that the parents are important, but we're working on plans for if the parent is not helpful or the parent cannot help, what can we do in spite of that or despite that? Because that's a reality, but we can't let the reality keep us from helping the kid to succeed.
So it's not acceptance of that. You find a way to somehow individually tailor support around that student who's not
correct.
Getting it at home?
Yes.
Correct. We offer interventions after school. We offer interventions in the classroom. We offer interventions at lunch. And we offer alternative. One of our ones we're trying this year that's working fairly well. If a child gets a failing grade in a standards-based test
yeah.
or assessment, then they can go to the study center, study on their own, and take an alternative assessment. If mm. pass the mm. alternative assessment, mm. then the child will get a C for that grade.
Mm.
But it means they have to go to the study center and work on it themselves. Or we can get the parents many times to say, "Well, you're going to go to the study center until you fix this."
Great,
so
if you can get it done.
To do that.
We got three great principles here closing this gap, and a lot of questions from our listeners about how that's done and what it takes. Diane's calling from Wakefield, Rhode Island. Hi, Diane. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question for your guests.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, do they believe that what they've achieved is possible without additional grant money? I understood one of your guests said they get money from the Gates Foundation.
Yes.
Another one indicated that they get federal funding because they're within a certain criteria.
Mm-hmm.
Could they possibly have done this without that? And my second question is, how do they possibly get the teachers' unions to buy mm-hmm. into longer school hours, longer school days, and longer school years?
Let me go to all three on those, Diane, and they're great questions. Shaw Regans, first to you. You've got explain what a KIPP school is. It's a charter school. There's 50 some of them around the country. They've been funded by Bill and Melinda Gates in part. But how does the question, how do you respond?
Well,
could you do it without this extra funding? And
you've got
teachers who, in a special circumstance, how do you get them to step up? Is it just because you're charter school? What about a public school?
Well, our operating budget, we actually, you know, in terms of the money we need to just function is actually a lot lower than it is in the Newark public schools. Why is that? I mean, part of the whole charter initiative is to have a high functioning school. I mean, it's part of KIPP philosophy too, is to have a high functioning school and not need all the additional money in a sense.
Are you saying you're spending less per child and getting a better result?
We get less per child, and so we definitely fundraise and it allows us to do, you know, to take certain trips and to do additional things. But when it comes down to it, you know, it's hard to put good teaching down to a dollar amount. You know, I mean, teaching is not like selling stock or you know, you can't, you know, or working off commission. You know, it's hard to sit there and say, you know what, you'll teach better if you give the incentive of making more money. So part of it is the investment into the mission, into the program of that particular school.
Let us hold the teacher buy-in piece for a moment. And Rick Hill, I want to put Diane's question to you. On the funding side, we're hearing lots of wonderful things being done here, individual intervention, longer school days and years. Can this gap be closed with the funding we've got in this country? How does funding come into it in your view?
Well, it's a good, interesting point for us is because we are considered a wealthy district in Texas, and we have a wealth equalization system, and so we actually give money back to the state. And so we've actually had several budget cuts, several multi-million dollar budget cuts over the last 4 or 5 years.
Yours gets shared with poorer districts elsewhere.
Yes, yes. And so we and I'm with Shaw on it, it's about buy-in. It's about, you know, I had a former superintendent tell me that, you know, teachers are working hard, and they're like a lion tamer. And if you put them if they're taming lions, and you say, well, we're going to give you more money if you do a better job taming the lions, well, guess what? That person in there is taming the lions as hard as they can. And so more money is not going to make them work harder. And so our teachers are committed to it. And I like the we're also doing parent classes. We have a recreational center where the kids go after school, and we have had parent classes in there where the parents are right next to the kids working themselves. And once they understand, then they can help expand to their kids.
So it's motivation.
I want to say amen to all the stuff that's going on because it's the stuff that's going on with us too.
Peter Davis, motivation over money. Shaw Regans and Rick Hill are saying in New Jersey and Texas, I can imagine some skeptical listeners out there thinking, well, yes, but nationally, can we really lick this just with motivation? Or do you agree?
No, I agree with them. In fact, we're right now, this is the last year of our federal grant money coming in, so we're actually going through a process with my staff on how we're going to continue on when we don't have this extra money. I believe that you can do what we're doing with the funds that you have, but you have to be willing to look at the funding in a different way, and you have to be willing to spend the funding in a different way. And you know, with federal money, you can do a lot of extra stuff, which is really great. I think you can do it within your budget, but you got to be creative in the use of your budget and open-minded in the use of your budget.
And
to answer the union question,
yes, sir.
We work within the union contract, but we did have to get a contract waiver to be on a block schedule. So every year as a staff, we have to vote on whether we're going to stay a block schedule
or not. What do you mean by that block schedule? Why is that a union issue?
Because
forgive my ignorance.
We have eight periods, but 8 periods a day is too many. So we go periods 1, 3, 5, 7 on one day, periods 2, 4, 6, 8 on the next day. So the teachers will see a larger number of students than they would if we were on a traditional setup. But the trade-off is that they do get two conference periods of 86 minutes. So they have 86 minute conference period every day.
But you know what it's like out there. Lots of people say we've got too many unmotivated teachers in this country, you know, to really get the job done to close this gap. Do you agree? Is it as simple as some pep rallies that pump up the motivation to change
that?
I think it's professional development as well. Everything that we've done that we're trying to do, we have to train our teachers to do. So professional development is a huge piece because it's not so much sometimes they don't want to do it, it's they're not sure how to do it. So when we went to block schedule, we had a tremendous amount of professional development to show the teachers how to use that block of time because it's non-traditional.
Shaw Regans in Newark?
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, I mean, let's be real here. I mean, I still teach currently. Mm-hmm. No one gets into education for the money. You know, I mean, it's even with increased funds in different cities and states and whatnot in terms of teaching, you know, it's honestly you can't put it down to a dollar amount, right? So it is. It's feeling able to do, like, from the professional development, feeling able to do the job. It's also being supported.
Mm-hmm. James is calling from Boston. Hi, James. You're on the air.
Hi, everyone. First, just let me commend all of the panelists for the great job that you've been doing in terms of closing the achievement gap.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a question for the panelists. I want them to please describe the components of the IDEAL after-school program partnership that can further support the strides that they've already made in closing the achievement gap, especially with the males of color.
And James, describe a little more what you're getting at there for those not as plugged in as you sound. The ideal after-school program, in other words, sponsored by the school, James, or otherwise?
Otherwise, in partnership with other people who are bringing additional monies in, either by grant, mm-hmm. private or public donations, and what the components will look like academically, will they be culturally enriching, mm-hmm. and especially to develop the relationships that I believe we need to develop with our Black and Latino males to help them, feel better about themselves and look forward to life after high school in a post-secondary nature. And what can these partnerships of people who will come in and annex themselves with these schools do to further solidify or help augment the closing of the achievement gap in their respective schools?
Great question. Peter Davis, what do you say, after school?
Well, it's a great question because we're working on this. In California, they passed a proposition, Proposition 49, which allows for an after-school program, which wasn't there before. So there's three components of it, one of which is an enhancement component, an activity component, and then a character education type component. So if I was looking for, and we are looking for partners, then we look for mentors is something that kids really need. But mentors are hard to come by because it takes time. So sure. a mentor type program would be an excellent part of that component if we could find it. The activity component is also, it can be any type of activity. So we're trying to look at something along, we have an art class and art stuff, looking at, towards art, music, that kind of thing, mm-hmm. where some of that activity could come from. So people who can help in that, and we have a drama program, so it's people who could come in and help the kids with that to help build that part of their personality. Then the other part is enhancement. There has to be an hour where we're enhancing what they're learning in school. So a partner that could come in and work with the kids on math and work with the kids on language arts or history or so forth that would be different than the normal setting would be a good partner to have too. And as far as the African-American and Hispanic role models and so forth that they really need, mentors have always proven to be the best way to do it. But even inspirational speakers to come and talk about what they do and how they got there and what you have to do to get there and kind of help them understand the networking that goes on and so forth, mm-hmm. that type of thing would be good as well. Just people come in and say, look, I'm a doctor and I got this way or because I did this, or I'm a military man and I got this way because I did this, mm-hmm. and so forth. So they can see that struggle is a natural part of life. Mm-hmm. But we can all succeed through the struggle.
Rick Hill.
But they need to see people really doing it.
Yeah, no, I love it. Rick Hill, you've got a mixed race school, minorities mm-hmm. in the minority. So what about in your case? I mean, Shaw Regan's, his kids go to school almost all the time. There's almost no after school. Though Shaw, I'm being a little facetious. But Rick, you've got a more standard schedule. So what about the after school piece of it, and both in terms of time and how it's used and modeling?
Well, what our main partner is the city of College Station, and we have a Lincoln Recreational Center where we have after-school programs there, and really it's close to the neighborhood where these kids come from. We have teachers that go there. We have programs going on there all the time. I've been around long enough that I actually have kids in my school now who I taught their parents from the same neighborhoods, and so wow. I can walk the street, and you know, or I can talk to tell them the school and say, hey, you know what, I taught your dad, so you know what, you're not going to get by on me on anything. And same thing with getting some of the students to come back. I have former students that I taught who are now attorneys and former, you know, NFL players who now have mortgage companies and things like that, who come back and say, you know what, education is the key. And you know, one thing I wanted to say, mm-hmm. And I know Shaw and Peter would agree with this, one of the things that really needs to go without saying with this is that you have to focus on data on individual students, mm-hmm. specific gaps and deficiencies these kids have, and that's a whole other piece to this.
So I'm sort sure of real time tracking of how they're doing.
Exactly,
and you jump into the breach when it opens up.
We benchmark through the year, and so we're not just tutoring. I mean, it's tutoring smarter. It's what is this kid deficient in? What's their problem? And let's do a specific intervention for that kid for that problem.
You know,
that's another way to do this.
When you put all these measures together, they sound so great, but they also sound what, so extraordinary? I mean, can this happen in any school in this country? Are you somehow each in extraordinary circumstances? Can these lessons be applied to your ordinary public school right across this country? Shall Regan, you're in a charter school. If you weren't, if you're dropped down in, you know, XYZ public school, are you sure this would all work?
I mean, investment, I mean, there are definitely, you know, some you know, there's more autonomy you have in a charter school than you have in a public school. But in terms of investing in the lives of the kids and being kid-focused, I mean, you can do that anywhere. You know, mm-hmm. Our teachers spend time also just getting to know kids, getting to know them as individuals, as people, and investing in them, you know, being mentors and reaching out to kids outside, after school hours and things of that nature. I mean, prior to me coming to Team Academy, had I not came out here, I was in the midst of starting a after-school enrichment program, mm-hmm. which was to basically connect using basketball and sports and bridging that to just academics and really drawing a connection between the two, because a lot of times kids see it as something that's totally separate. And with that would have came some sort of character development piece, you know, and character education doesn't just have to happen in the charter school, you know, making good choices, being good people, doing the right thing when no one is watching, things of that, moral codes and that type of stuff doesn't have to come just through a charter school. That can be taught anywhere. And so just investing in the child and the student as individuals, as people first, I think is key, and that can happen in any situation.
Mm. Peter Davis, we want to celebrate the successes in each of your schools in closing this gap, but we don't want to be Pollyanna-ish here. When right. you look at this as at a systemic level, nationally, we've got millions and millions and millions of kids, and most of them are not having this gap closed as you all are. So systemically, can people just sort of pick up tips from Peter and Shaw and Rick and off to the races, or are there deeper issues we've got to confront here?
Well, I would say that they can't pick up tips, but there's systems, there's things that I do at my school that other people could do at their school. But everything takes a change in thinking. So, and what I'm thinking about when I say that is we've worked over the years to have a shared leadership within our school. So it's not my job to make sure the kids get to class on time. It's everybody's job to make sure the kids get to class on time. And I don't just reward the kids for getting to class on time. Everybody rewards their kids for getting to class on time. We've developed a shared mission as a staff, including the classified staff. There's a shared mission that we work towards. We have shared expectations that everybody's aware of when we work towards. The idea is that to develop, as already been stated, positive student relationships, and we've working over the years. How do you do that, and how do you maintain mm-hmm. that? And then the sharing of data, I think, is very important. We share a lot of data at my school. There's a lot of data that we keep, and there's a lot of data that we share amongst ourselves and within the district. Mm. So all that leads up to is again rethinking how the school operates, and it takes time and it takes training on the part of the students and mm. the staff and the parents to do that. And so the issue is, can they do it? Yes. Can they do it in a year? No. Can you do it in 4 years? Yes. But it takes a concerted effort over time with leadership. In our case, when the principal changed, I was already at the school, so I could carry it on to get to that point. Because unfortunately, what happens sometimes is the leadership gets it going. 2 years later, they're gone. And then someone else comes in and they got to restart it. So we've been able to have 7 years of sustained, philosophically, we're not the same type of leader.
Continuity, but
philosophically.
Yeah, right. Rick Hill, when you look out your school window there at the economic piece of this, you're the only school in Texas that pulled off this hat trick of closing on both these fronts this gap. What about the economy? I mean, as a nation, can we pull this off? If we've got Hispanic families at the bottom of the income level, Black families, many down there as well, is that a roadblock to doing this on a wider scale, not just three schools, but a nation full?
You know, I'm just a science teacher, kind of, sort of. But
oh, come on, principal, you got to have all the answers.
I know. Well, but you know, I think the problems are real deep. I think they're pervasive. I agree with the guys in saying, you know, this is something that doesn't happen overnight, and it's not something you can do just a couple of tips on. It really is a belief system change, mindset change. We've done it in the district. Our other schools in our district have done sort of some of the same things, and we're making progress. But when I walk the neighborhood, I see mothers and grandmothers and great grandmothers, and they never had positive experiences in their schools, mm-hmm. and so that's one of the reasons why we go to them, and they don't come to us because they don't like coming to the school because last time they were there they had a bad experience, mm-hmm. and so. It can be done, but I'm telling you, it's a deep-seated, pervasive problem. However, there are people out there working on it and getting after it.
And reaching out and making it happen. Let me take a call from Columbia. Let's just get this one on the table, if I may, Shah. David in Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, David.
Hello, fellas. I want to tell you I'm really enjoying it. I had to pull over on the side of the road. As a matter of fact, I'm getting ready to go train about 60 teachers right now.
All right.
So I had to go stop. I had to pull over. I was so interested in your show, but I want to congratulate all your guests for the fine work. Here in South Carolina, I help coordinate the truancy and dropout program for the state of South Carolina. As you know, our nationwide is a pervasive problem. And look,
David, you're breaking up on us. I've got a little forward hint here, Shah Regans. David wanted to ask about how you encourage parents to get fully involved. I mean, he's in charge of truancy there. Parents have a lot to do with that. How do you get the full buy-in of parents? Rick Hill's talking about walking the streets, talking with grandmothers and great-grandmothers. How do you do it?
Well, one thing we do is we do home visits. The very first thing that happens is we have somewhat like, I guess, kind of a informational in a sense, and we basically just talk about the school, what the school is about, what the mission of the school is, what the standards are, what the expectation is for teachers, for parents, for students, so on and so forth. And then the next thing we do home visits. In terms of parents, just kind of the ongoing thing we do, I mean, every parent at the school has my phone number, can reach out to me at any given time. Teachers are around at the school all the time. Every student has their teacher's phone numbers. The way in which we involve parents is, you know, we teach. So what I basically tell parents is I don't need you to teach what I'm teaching, but what I do need you to do is to check in with your child, what you're learning, what's going on,
mm-hmm.
you know, just general questions that you don't have to be an expert in math in order to show that you're interested in what your child is doing. So basically empowering them in a sense of having them be involved without the type of involvement we need in terms of just kind of keeping tabs on your child and signing their nightly agenda with homework and signing their progress report and having them come in for conferences, those type of things. There's no skill set that's needed.
You don't need to be intimidated with the type of help we're asking for. Yep.
Yes, exactly. Mm-hmm. So the commitment we're asking for doesn't require a college education. In fact, it doesn't require any sort of education. You know, it's just more so a matter of, you know, just taking a general interest in what your child is doing and knowing what they're doing.
A straight up commitment. David, I'm sorry we lost your line there, but I'm glad you called. Let me get one more call from Boston. Barbara, you're on the air.
Hi. I'd just like to say amen to the three gentlemen who are talking today. I'm a teacher for 10 years. I taught in Oakland, California, and now I'm in Boston. I taught in Roxbury, and now mm-hmm. I'm in grad school actually learning how to become a principal. And I saw in Oakland a middle school that was one of the worst, turned into one of the best. And the way that we did that was by being involved, the principal involved the teachers, paid the teachers for our time, and involved the parents. And I just, what these three gentlemen are saying is exactly what worked for us. I worked in Roxbury in a school that kids were bringing guns to school, and the students were not valued, the teachers were not valued, and I hope I can be a principal like them.
And turn it all around. Barbara, that's great, and thank you for your call. I want to ask you, in the little time we've got here, Peter Davis, first to you, I guess, No Child Left Behind. Is it working for you? President Bush says the gap is closing, but the numbers don't really seem to show that. Is No Child Left Behind working? Are you glad for it?
I'm glad for elements of it. I'm not glad about the testing scores that they're holding us to. As already mentioned, you have to go up every year, and I think at some point if we continue in that rate, then we'll all be program improvement schools at some point because what they're asking for is not realistic. When you have to deal with children with second language issues and you have to deal with children who are coming to the country where our school is the first school they've attended and they're in eighth grade. So there's some things you have to deal with that aren't being addressed realistically. statistically, as far as I'm concerned, as far as the test scores go. But I do think the idea that you need to make sure that you're getting quality teachers with some experience in all the schools and so forth, that's good. But the other thing that No Child Left Behind is doing is it's making the pool of teachers to choose from much smaller. It's making the substitute teachers you can hire much smaller, and it's making the college aides that you can use much smaller. And we need all those people to help us run our schools well. Mm. So that legislation, that part of the legislation, is actually tying our hands behind our back. It's not more than it is helping us. You know, and in the future, it's limiting what we got coming up in the future because it's becoming so difficult to get these quality people to be at our schools.
Wow. Well, there's so much more we'd like to ask and hear, but with that, our time goes away. I want to thank each of you. In College Station, Texas, Rick Hill, principal at Cypress Grove Intermediate School. Principal Hill, thank you very much for being here today. Good luck at the school.
Thank you.
And Shaw Regan's 29 years old in Newark, New Jersey. You've got a big career ahead of you. We hear your passion right there. Keep it going, man, and thanks a lot for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Peter Davis, Culver City, California, at the Hill Classical Middle School. Good luck, Principal Davis. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.